Well, good evening, and I'd like to have you open up your Bibles, please, to Job chapter 39. We're going to look very quickly at chapter 39 tonight, move rapidly through this, but there are some interesting things that we're going to see in this. There's going to be 12 animals mentioned in chapter 39, or actually starting in chapter 38, verse 39, through the end of chapter 39, verse 30. There's 12 animals mentioned. God is speaking now, and He's going to be using 10 of these animals as examples for Job. On just a casual reading, you find out these are just kind of some interesting statements. Most of them are very common statements, things that, you know, a little bit of knowledge. A set of Encyclopedia Britannicas can tell you the same thing. What I hope to do tonight is just look and see, what is God trying to say? Why did God point these 10 animals out to Job? Each of them is going to have a doctrinal lesson for Job so that he can base his faith in God on what he sees. So let's begin in chapter 38, verse 39. It says, "Do you hunt the prey for the lioness and satisfy the hunger of the lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in the thicket? Who provides food for the raven when its young cry out to God and wander about for lack of food?" There's two animals talked about here, the lion and the raven. Both are searching for food. Job has been put himself in a position where he's been challenging God. He's got some questions about God, as we've said before. And God is trying to bring him back to the place where he is not questioning God or accusing God, but simply says, "I don't know. I'll just have to trust God." And that is the answer for our lives, is so many things we don't know. We just want to trust God. And God is capable of handling all the situations. The first one, he asks him, "Do you hunt prey for the lions?" And God, and of course the answer would be no. God is the one who provides for the lions. Now, this is a natural thing, and it comes up even now as we look at evolution and the need for God. Is there really a God? Who knows if there's a God or not? But what God is pointing out here, first of all, is that even creation itself, although it looks like it's self-sustained, God doesn't provide for the lions. Lions actually go out and do their own hunting. God is pointing out one of the facts here. Well, that's not necessarily true. If God did not provide for the lions themselves could not hunt. He's provided both the ability to hunt and the means to hunt for the lions. The next thing, notice this. If that is the case, if you wonder, well, maybe nature just takes care of itself. Maybe there's no need for a God in nature. Although Job does not supply for the animals, nature itself supplies for the animals. Look at the next one. "Who provides food for the raven when its young cry out to God and wander about for lack of food?" In this case, the ravens won't even take care of their young. Ravens are known of just abandoning their young and letting them go and going off and doing their own thing. They'll let their young stay and be hungry. We won't look there right now because we're kind of rushing through this. But in Luke chapter 12, verse 24, Jesus uses the example of the raven and says, "God provides for the raven. If God provides for the raven, will He not provide for us also?" So there's a case where nature does not take care of itself. The raven has its young and flies off and often leaves the raven alone. And if God did not intervene, the ravens themselves would starve. So God sees it as one, Job can't handle it. Nature itself can't handle it. God is the one that's required to handle these things. The next one is the mountain goat. "Do you know when the mountain goat gives birth? Do you watch when the doe bears her fawn? Do you count the months till they bear? Do you know the time they give birth? They crouch down and bring forth their young. Their labor pains are ended. Their young thrive and grow strong in the wilds. They leave and do not return." Here's a case of speaking of mountain goats and does or deer. And no one can even keep track of even their daily life schedule on how long are they pregnant and where do they give birth and have you ever seen them give birth. Now again, science has done great things since the days of Job. We've got, you know, National Geographic and Jacques Cousteau and everybody out there filming all these things and measuring it. But yet there are still some things that man has not seen that happen on this planet. It's happening today, but we can't get there. We can't get our cameras there. We can't measure it, although it's happening. And what it does, it throws us to a position where if creation is that hard to understand, if it's that hard for us to see creation and picture it and measure it, creation itself, there must be something greater than creation. It must be the God that created it. It says that the last verse there, in the last part of verse 4, they leave and do not return. In other words, although the parents themselves provide for them while they're young, these mountain goats grow up, the young deer grow up, and leave their parents and go off into the wild by themselves, and there they find God, and God sustains them in that position. I'm going to ask my assistant here, my partner in faith, to hand these out, because what I've done is I've written down each one of these things that we're going to see tonight, and on the side I've written down a point that this brings out. And we've looked at four of the ten so far, and this would be a good time to kind of look at this paper and find out what's going on here. For example, it says the lion. A man cannot provide for creation, like he can't provide for a lion, but God does provide. God's place, desire to hunt in the lions, and creation's needs are not greater than the Creator. The point that we would want to bring out of this with the lion hunting is that the creation has needs. The lion, every part of creation has needs, but those needs are never greater than the Creator. So the point that we want to see, first of all, far to the right, there's a column of points, is Creator is greater than needs. Nothing that God created has a greater need than He can provide. The raven, what does the raven teach us? That the Creator is needed by the creation. The creation itself is not sufficient. If you would remove God from the planet, or if God would not look over these things, creation itself would crumble. Creation itself would fall apart. Of course, there's things built into nature. We're not denying that. But nature is not self-sufficient. It is not going to go on forever without God. So two things. Creator is greater than the needs of the creation. The Creator is needed by the creation. Or the other way of saying that, creation needs its Creator. We're not even talking about mankind. We're talking about what Job can see. And Job sees that the Creator can meet the needs of his creation and that the creation itself needs God. Mountain goats, what do we see there? Well, Job and man has limited knowledge of the mountain goats or limited knowledge of the creation. This would then mean that man has limited knowledge of the Creator. It kind of goes on this idea. The idea that whatever God has created, if there's a character trait, say that it's the character trait of love, you may see that in people, then the one who created that character trait is then greater than that. So God's love is greater than any love you've ever seen. The strength, some kind of a person's strength, or the strength of the waves, the strength of the universe, something the sun, God's strength is greater than that. Everything in creation that you can see, a character trait in creation, you can point to God and say, God is greater than that. Now, of course, you've got to consider the idea of sin. God can't commit sin greater than what, you know, people can commit sin. But again, God's grace is still greater than the sin itself. God's forgiveness is greater than the rebellion. So you can say, well, there's great rebellion in the earth. God's forgiveness is greater. God's grace is greater. So it's the idea that God is the ultimate in love. God is the ultimate in strength. God is the ultimate, in this case, on the mountain goats, the knowledge of the Creator is limited. If we look at the mountain goats and we say, well, there's only a limited amount of knowledge that we have on mountain goats, well, then that must mean we don't have all knowledge of God. Now, this is kind of some basic things, but how does Job know this? How do we know that? God created mountain goats. We can't keep track of everything on the mountain goats. That must mean the same thing towards God. We can't know everything there is to know about God. The next one is speaking about the doe. The doe, it says, let me look back at that verse and read it to you. It says, do you watch when the doe bears her fawn? Do you count the months till they bear? In other words, Job is not even involved in the process. Does the mountain goat or the doe need man? No. Does nature need man? The creation can go on without man. If mankind were removed from this planet, it would not be the end of the planet. It would not be a disaster on this planet. The creation does not need mankind. So then, what's the point? The Creator does not need mankind. The Creator is sufficient without mankind. Now, of course, He created man and He wants man. So the point with the doe is the Creator does not need man. The next one it talks about in verse 5, it says, who let the wild donkey go free? Who untied his ropes? In other words, there's a wild donkey, they can't catch it. It's running around the cities and running around in the country down by the Dead Sea, apparently. And God asked, who let it go? It was chained up. Who put that wild donkey out there? You've got other donkeys that you've captured, but why is that donkey out there? Who let that donkey go and fill that whole place with wild donkeys? Well, it wasn't Job. It wasn't mankind. God was the one that set it free. I gave him the wasteland as his home, the salt flats as his habitat. He laughs at the commotion in the town. Now notice this. He laughs at the commotion in the town. He's out there by himself around the salt sea, or Dead Sea area, out in the wilderness. And if the donkey were to run by and see all the commotion, people are working and trying to keep their houses clean and trying to buy food and take care of all their business, and they're just busy, busy, busy. And the wild donkey looks up while it's grazing or while it's running by and says, just kind of laughs. He thinks, what a hectic life. I'm glad I'm not living in the city. I'm glad I'm out here in the desert. He laughs at the commotion in the town. He does not hear a driver shout. He has no master. He ranges the hills for his pasture and searches for the green thing. The idea here again, the idea that creation does not need man. The donkey doesn't go up to man, and you don't see him hanging outside the city gates going, gosh, I wish I could go inside the city. I wish someone would come out and tell me what to do. He just runs by and laughs. Creation does not need mankind. Verse 9. Will the wild ox, and this would be the auroch, I checked this out, this an extinct animal, became extinct in 1627. It was 6 foot high, and it was undomesticated, meaning they could not raise it like cattle. They couldn't raise it like livestock. It was something that they would try. It would just walk away from it. It had no sense of wanting to work with mankind. You know, like certain animals, like a dog will go out of its way to please man. A cat will go even less away out of to please man. Cattle and things will work with men. They'll put up a fence. Cattle will stay in the fence. You know, they won't knock them down. I don't know anything about cattle. He doesn't know about cattle. But they're willing to work with man. But this wild ox called the auroch, it says, was undomesticated. It goes on and says, will he stay by your manger at night? No. Can you hold him in the furrow with a harness? No. You can't use him for anything. He will not listen. Can you hold him? It says, will he till the valleys behind you? No. Will you rely on him for his great strength? No. Will you lead him your heavy work to him? No. Can you trust him to bring in your grain and gather it in your threshing floor? No. Well, the same thing with God. If there's an animal out in the world, out in the universe, out in our area, and now it's extinct, you know, extinct in 1627, then God is the same way. We cannot control God. We can't put God in a box and say, okay, God, this is your manger. You need to stay here and do this. And God, I need you to go over here and do this. We are not God's boss. So if we see an animal in creation that is uncontrollable, then that would mean also that God is uncontrollable. Now again, not irresponsible, but uncontrollable by man. The next animal that we see, it says, speaking of the ostrich, verse 13, the wings of the ostrich flap joyfully, but they cannot compare with the pinions and feathers of the stork. Here we start talking about the ostrich. And the ostrich looks like a ridiculous animal. As we read these verses, you can picture in your mind what an ostrich looks like. It's built strange, the long neck, the little head, the little brain, the awkward body. It looks completely useless. Now, and plus the fact, we're going to find out how foolish it is, how basically stupid an ostrich is. And God admits it right here. It says, she lays her eggs on the ground and lets them warm in the sun, unmindful that a foot may crush them, that some wild animal may trample them. What ostriches will do, they'll share nests. Two or three, or I don't know how many, several of them will get together, and they'll just deposit their eggs in the same place. When the nest is full, they don't bother to go somewhere else. They'll just lay them outside the nest there, where other ostriches, or themselves, will just trample them. A very foolish thing to do. They bear these young, they have the eggs laying there, and then they just leave them there, like that they could care less. They don't think. They have no wisdom. Why aren't they smart? Well, let's read on. She treats her young harshly as if they were not hers. She cares not that her labor was in vain. Listen to verse 17. For God did not endow her with wisdom or give her a share of good sense. Why does an ostrich act that way? That's the way God made them. There are some animals that are so wise. You talk about the migration patterns of birds. Wow, they're smart. God gave them that wisdom. Here's a case where God did not give the ostrich wisdom in this particular case. The point that we're going to see here is an ostrich, about the time you say an ostrich is foolish and you begin mocking an ostrich, saying it's stupid, it's worthless, it looks weird, it can't fly, it flaps its wings and it goes nowhere. Look at the next verse. Yet, verse 18, yet when she spreads her feathers to run, she laughs at horse and rider. An ostrich can run 50 miles an hour for half a mile, between 40 and 50 miles for quite a distance. and that's faster than a horse. There's three animals that we know of that run faster than an ostrich. A gazelle, an antelope, and a cheetah run faster. An ostrich runs that fast. So about the, and we'll look at the next verse then, verse 19. No, it's the end of verse 18. She laughs at horse and rider. About the time you're mocking the ostrich for being foolish and stupid and being useless, she goes running past you on your horse, your big mighty horse, and goes running past you, looking back and laughing at you. In other words, the point we see here on the ostrich, the Creator determines the value of circumstances and other things that we face in life. We do not know when your first appearance of an ostrich, you analyze it and you do not see the value of the ostrich. But yet the Creator has a value. In fact, it's apparently the fourth fastest animal on the planet. There is value to the ostrich. It's fast. It's why? I mean, we don't ride ostriches. The point is not can we use the ostrich. The point is the ostrich does have value. The same thing. God is telling Job through this. You do not know the value of circumstances. You do not know the value of people or anything you come in contact with. You may analyze it with all of your great wisdom and say, aha, we have found a foolish, useless bird. And then it runs past you. God is warning Job. Don't judge circumstances. You do not judge, for we do not know. If you can't judge the ostrich fairly, then you can't judge the way God has laid out your life. The next point. He spoke of the horses, and now we're going to start talking about the horse. Do you give the horse his strength, or clothe his neck with a flowing mane? Do you make him leap like a locust, striking terror with his proud snorting? Four things are mentioned there about the horse. Its strength, its beauty, its ability to leap, or its ability, and then its proud snorting, or its overwhelming confidence. Speaking of a war horse. Now, this is a magnificent thing. I think of people like Hannibal or Alexander the Great, Napoleon, these guys that rode horses, magnificent, beautiful horses. They'd ride them into battle. They'd ride them into war. And these horses would go with them. They'd stay with their master throughout the battle. And they are dressed for war. And they fought well. They're trained for war. Magnificent creatures. But again, if that is how powerful and magnificent a horse is, think of the Creator itself. Let's look at the rest of this verse. Chapter beginning, verse 20. Do you make him... start in verse 21. He paused fiercely, rejoicing in his strength, and charges into the fray. He laughs at fear, afraid of nothing. Now remember, this is one of God's creations. And if this is the creation that God made, God, again, is the ultimate of this creation. He is greater than this creation. So if the horse can do this, just think how confident God is. Just think how strong God is. He laughs at fear, afraid of nothing. He does not shy away from the sword. The quiver rattles against his side, along with the flashing spear and lance. In frenzied excitement, he eats up the ground. He cannot stand still when the trumpet sounds. At the blast of the trumpet, he snorts. Aha! He catches the scent of battle from afar, the shout of the commanders, and the battle cry. And this is describing a horse. The point here again, if the horse has strength, beauty, ability, and confidence, overwhelming confidence, then the Creator also has strength, beauty, ability, and confidence beyond what man can know, beyond what man can understand. The last two animals that we have spoken of here are birds. Verse 26 says, does the hawk take flight by your wisdom and spread his wings towards the south? This is speaking of the migration system. The hawk is going to right across.